folks, and welcome to ID the Future. I'm Casey Luskin, broadcasting with Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture in Seattle, Washington. We have on the show with us today Dr. Wolf Eckhard Lonick, a geneticist who recently retired from the Max Planck Institute for Plant Breeding Research in Germany. Dr. Lonick's name should be familiar to ID the Future listeners, especially those who have been following the podcast recently. Earlier this year, we had Dr. Lonick on talking about the evolution of dogs, and last year he came on and gave us a wonderful discussion about the evolution of the long-necked giraffe, or perhaps maybe I should say not the evolution, but problems with the evolution of dogs and the long-necked giraffe. In any case, today we're very privileged to have Dr. Lonick on the show again to talk to us about his direct area of specialty, and that would be plants, in particular the origin of carnivorous plants. So Dr. Lonick, thank you so much for coming back on ID the Future.
Thank you very much for inviting and having me again.
Well, I know that you have written a fair amount on the topic of carnivorous plants and the origin of these fascinating plants. You yourself have published on this topic. What have you published on the topic of the origin and the workings of carnivorous plants?
I have been interested in this topic for more than 40 years now. It was my first Master of Science thesis where I used these examples, and afterwards I met a professor who was very angry with me, but not the one who had to judge whether the Masters of Science thesis was correct or not. Another one, he was very angry and said, well, this is impossible, you can't argue against our present neo-Darwinian views. And I asked him, well, what about the carnivorous plants? What about utricularia? Can you explain it by Darwinian means? And he said to me, well, I cannot explain it, but the Darwinism is, in spite of all this, true. And this was very interesting for me as a student to hear that somebody says it cannot be explained by Darwinism, but would be true anyway. And from that time on, I used many examples, so especially one example, the utricularia example, the bladderwort example, in many discussions. And during all these years, also could publish a peer-reviewed paper about carnivorous plants. And in 2011, I published a book of more than 270 pages where I discussed all the arguments which have, as far as I know, ever produced by evolutionary scientists to explain the origin of carnivorous plants and especially of utricularia. So, one peer-reviewed paper and a book.
And why is this topic for you so interesting for the origins of question, especially for intelligent design? What exactly has to be explained when we're talking about carnivorous plants?
Before I come to this question directly, I will just quote a few quotations about this plant, this bladderwort, utricularia. And now we'll provide some very short quotations. This plant genus, which has more than 200 species. They are called the strangest plants on Earth. They are called the fastest plant in the world. They are called the most wonderful plant in the world. It was Francis E. Lloyd, this is an exception, transferring Darwin's comment on the Venus flytrap to utricularia. They are not exceeded by any other carnivorous plant. Another author called it the wonder of nature and the strangest and probably most highly developed plant in the world and the most refined mechanism to capture small animals, the most remarkable trap, the most sophisticated trap devices, the fastest trapping movement, and these traps are amongst the carnivorous plants by far the most ingenious of all, the most complex and highly evolved organs shown by utricularia, and one author called it the incomparable trap of utricularia. The second edition of the book is on the internet, and there you can check all these data and can check whether these quotations really convey the meaning which I've just quoted. So, this is really interesting. The strangest, fastest, most wonderful, and so on, most complex plant mechanism which people have known among carnivorous plants. This is, of course, interesting to know whether Darwinism can explain it.
So how does neo-Darwinism, or as it's often called, the synthetic theory, how does it explain the origin of carnivorous plants, or how do other evolutionary theories explain the origin of carnivorous plants?
First, the main theory. It is still the same, in principles at least, the same idea which was published by Darwin. And it was Ernst Mayr. He spoke of a multi-step process by mutations with slight or even invisible effects on the phenotype. And others have echoed similar ideas. And this is virtually the same as Darwin proposed it. Evolution by innumerable slight variations. In evolution by extremely slight variations, infinitesimally small inherited variations, as all Darwin, infinitesimally small changes, infinitesimally slight variations, slow degrees, and so on and so on. And Darwin says, for natural selection can act only by taking advantage of slight successive variations. She can never take a leap, but must advance by the shortest and slowest steps. So this is the modern synthesis, which is still proclaimed as the right answer on all these questions, including, of course, the origin of the carnivorous plants. And I have, in that book, which you can find on the internet, I have prepared a list of authors who have pronounced similar ideas. The very fact that now, at present, there are hundreds, perhaps even thousands of publications for evidence for positive selection on a molecular level, it shows that this is really still the main theory. And as Nature once said, all of biology rests on the foundation of neo-Darwinism, drawing on the principle of population biology and molecular genetics. So this is the main explanation. There are some minorities. There are also some ideas on saltationist explanations, but the saltationist theories do not provide answers to the questions where these complex structures shown by this special genus Utricularia have come into existence. Well, these are the main two ideas.
So I know that one of your favorite examples is the trap of the bladderwort, and of course you've written about this. Can you explain for us in some non-technical language, Dr. Lohnig, what these plants look like and how the trap functions?
Well, imagine an egg-like structure, small, up to about 1 centimeter long, with a door in front which can only open inwards. This door is watertight, with special devices to keep it watertight, because water is its surrounding medium. The trap is set by hydrostatic pressure. The sides concave, and when the trap is set, the bladder appears to be rather narrow when looked at from above. Many of these species of Utricularia are aquatic plants, which put forth flowers above the surface of the water. And these flowers, these are angiosperms, are similar to the flowers of Antirrhinum, the well-known snapdragon. So these are highly specialized suction traps. And as said, they are adapted to water as surrounding medium. The trap is set by negative hydrostatic pressure. There are glandular structures outside and inside the bladder, and they were shown to be involved in the water transport from the lumen to the surrounding medium. So when a potential prey, e.g. a little water flea or some other little animal, including fish fry or other small animals, stimulate the antennae of the trapdoor. The ladder is opened and the trap walls, being under negative pressure, expand rapidly, sucking in water through the door opening. The prey is sucked in concomitantly and the door quickly returns to its former state. This suction process has to be found to be happening in less than half a millisecond. And that's why it cannot be viewed directly how it is open and how it is closed. Only now most advanced technology made it possible to exactly photograph and see the time that this mechanism functions. So it is one of the fastest movements in the plant kingdom. Perhaps I should also mention that the present neo-Darwinian explanation, as was said about that explanation by Meyer and similarly by Futuyama and other authors, so quotation, every aspect of the wonderful design so admired by the natural theologians could be explained by natural selection. Darwin's theory of natural selection made any invocation of teleology unnecessary. This was Meyer, a quote. Similarly, Dawkins says, the Darwinian theory commands superabundant power to explain. And the Nobel laureate Konrad Lorenz, he said that natural selection could explain every form of life. And he even said, there's no other doctrine which has been so absolutely been found true as the evolution theory of Charles Darwin. And there were, of course, also objections.
Dr. Lohnig, is it correct that all carnivorous plants live on low-nutrient soils and that carnivory must be an adaptation to such environments? Which other plants live under such conditions or in such ecosystems, and what does utricularia really show?
I checked many of these points. And first, I would like to emphasize that there are many other plants living in the same ecosystem, and it is not only low-nutrient soils. There are many different environments. It is not only low-nutrient environments, but there are some, for example, the most common utricularia lives not in low-nutrient environments, but in environments which have much nutrients and even which are full of nutrients. There are 7 species of utricularia in Middle Europe, and none of these 7 species occurs only in low-nutrient soils or low-nutrient environments. So it is wrong to say that this is an absolute adaptation to low-nutrient soils. And importantly, so many other plants occur in the same environments. There are dozens of other plants in ecological systems where utricularia occur in Europe. And the same is because it's a cosmopolitan species, there must be hundreds, perhaps even thousands of plants which live together with utricularia, which are not carnivorous plants. There are other methods and possibilities to survive in these special ecological environments where these carnivorous plants occur. Now we may turn to the objections.
What were the objections to the neo-Darwinian explanation of the trap given by the German biologist Robert Nachtwey, and are they still up to date?
He wrote a book, Der Irrweg des Darwinismus, means in English, the wrong path or the wrong way of Darwinism, means the error path, literally translated. And he had the following questions. Quote, which non-directional mutation should have occurred first in a normal leaf tip, and subsequently displayed any selective advantage? Without an advantage, it would have been lost as trivial. The modern synthesis strongly emphasizes that mutation and selection have to cooperate to generate new structures. So, by which blind mutation should the suction trap have originated? End of quote. And again, he said regarding the problem of further evolutionary stages, Nachtwey continues, quote, even a perfect suction trap displaying the astonishing ability to rapidly catch animals would have no advantage in the struggle for life because the prey would not be digested. Conversely, the production of highly effective digestive juices would be of no avail for the tip of a leaf as long as it could not capture the prey, which is absolutely necessary. But even if suction trap and digestive juices cooperated, nothing would be gained in the struggle for life. The dissolved proteins must also be absorbed and metabolized to species-specific proteins. So the formation of the suction trap requires the perfect cooperation of many different genes and developmental factors. Our end of quote. Maxwell concluded that none of the contemporary evolutionary theories was able to answer these questions, proposing that the answer might lie outside the present scientific paradigms.
Well, Dr. Lonig, I think that we're running out of time for this first podcast, so thank you for coming on and telling us about the origin and biology of carnivorous plants. I'm Casey Luskin with ID the Future. Stay tuned for more with Dr. Wolf Eckhard Lonig.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.